Chapter 20. Getting the broth into Peter takes an hour of coaxing, begging, threatening, and yes, kissing. But finally, sip by sip, he empties the pot. I let him drift off to sleep then and attend to my own needs, wolfing down a supper of grousling and roots while I watch the daily report in the sky. No new casualties. Still, Peter and I have given the audience a fairly interesting day. Hopefully, the game makers will allow us a peaceful night. I automatically look around for a good tree to nest in before I realize that's over. At least for a while, I can't very well leave Peter unguarded on the ground. I left the scene of his last hiding place on the bank of the stream untouched. How could I conceal it? And we're a scant 50 yards downstream. I put on my glasses, place my weapons in readiness, and settle down to keep watch. The temperature drops rapidly, and soon I'm chilled to the bone. Eventually, I give in and slide into the sleeping bag with Peter. It's toasty warm, and I snuggle down gratefully until I realize it's more than warm. It's overly hot, because the bag is reflecting back his fever. I check his forehead and find it burning and dry. I don't know what to do. Leave him in the bag and hope the excessive heat breaks the fever? Take him out and hope the night air cools him off? I end up just dampening a strip of bandage and placing it on his forehead. It seems weak, but I'm afraid to do anything too drastic. I spend the night half sitting, half lying next to Peter, refreshing the bandage and trying not to dwell on the fact that by teaming up with him, I've made myself far more vulnerable than when I was alone. Tethered to the ground, on guard, with a very sick person to take care of. But I knew he was injured, and still I came after him. I'm just going to have to trust that whatever instinct sent me to find him was a good one. When the sky turns rosy, I notice the sheen of sweat on Peter's lip and discover the fever has broken. He's not back to normal, but it's come down a few degrees. Last night, when I was gathering vines, I came upon a bush of rue's berries. I strip off the fruit and mash it up in the broth pot with cold water. Peter's struggling to get up when I reach the cave.
"I woke up and you were gone," he says. "I was worried about you."
I have to laugh as I ease him back down. "You were worried about me? Have you taken a look at yourself lately?"
"I thought Cato and Clove might have found you. They like to hunt at night," he says, still serious.
"Clove? Which one is that?" I ask.
"The girl from District 2. She's still alive, right?" he says.
"Yes. There's just them and us and Thresh and Foxface," I say. That's what I nicknamed the girl from 5. "How do you feel?"
"Better than yesterday. This is an enormous improvement over the mud," he says. "Clean clothes and medicine and a sleeping bag. And you?"
Oh, right, the whole romance thing. I reach out to touch his cheek, and he catches my hand and presses it against his lips. I remember my father doing this very thing to my mother, and I wonder where Peter picked it up. Surely not from his father and the witch. "No more kisses for you until you've eaten," I say. We get him propped up against the wall, and he obediently swallows the spoonfuls of the berry mush I feed him. He refuses the grousling again, though.
"You didn't sleep," Peter says.
"I'm all right," I say, "but the truth is, I'm exhausted."
"Sleep now. I'll keep watch. I'll wake you if anything happens," he says.
I hesitate.
"Katniss, you can't stay up forever."
He's got a point there. I'll have to sleep eventually, and probably better to do it now when he seems relatively alert and we have daylight on our side. "All right," I say, "but just for a few hours. Then you wake me."